The Know Your Gear Podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Know Your Gear Podcast, episode 359. The first one I wanted to talk about was a super chat that I missed last week. It was the last super chat from Floodland, who says, Phil, will a Gibson Tribute hold their value? Will Gibson Tributes hold their value? I believe they will go up in value. This is like a stock channel now. Is that what we're going to talk about all the time? You know, I'm going to go on a tangent on this, Floodland. I want to talk about the subject, show you my experience with that particular guitar, and then also talk about funny thing. I've been doing the pod clips. If you guys don't know, I have a second channel where I dump all kinds of interesting, shorter versions of things I do on this channel, longer versions, whether it's podcasts or videos or extra bonus podcasts. But creating them and putting them on there, I get to watch like the podcasts throughout the years recently. And man, do we talk about like literally what's going on in that minute. It's like when COVID was happening, it was like every show was like, can you believe the price of the guitars? I can't find the guitar I want. It's so expensive and I can't even find it even if I could, you know, afford it. And now it's like every fifth question is, I need to sell all the stuff I bought during COVID. How do I sell stuff? How do I get rid of stuff? What is the value of the stuff I want to get rid of? It's just what I'm trying to say is, I know a lot of you that are watching are new and you come here and you're maybe hanging out because, you know, it's a gear channel. It's geeky gear talk. But man, if you're in the market for guitars, this is the time to buy. Everybody's trying to get rid of some guitars, whether they're a store, a manufacturer, or a person. But let's get back to his particular question, which was, will a Gibson Tribute hold value? You know, it's funny, this question is a little traumatic to me because I did a video, I dare say viral video, like a million more view, you know, million or more views video on this channel many years ago. I think it was 2017. I went into a Sam Ash and I said, hey, you guys, you know, everybody, the big thing at that time was Andertons. And they were like, Lee Anderton and Rob Chapman were doing this. What guitar would we buy if we had a budget? It was like a big thing. And they were doing that video all the time. And they were great. I watched them. I was awesome. And so they would go into the Andertons store and pick out the gear they would buy. And at the time, 2017, I still had the store. And so I'd get a lot of viewers going, Phil, what guitar would you buy if you had $500? And I just thought, well, if I go in my store and go, well, I'd pick that one right there, I'd be like, well, you know, I don't know. That's like so copying the Andertons guys that I kind of felt like, you know, and then somebody's like, well, I just want to see what you would do in this situation. I'm like, yeah, but it was really their idea. So I was like, what can I do to make that idea more my own? And even though I had a store at the time, I called Guitar Center and said, can I come to your store and buy a guitar, $500? And the Guitar Center's like, we don't allow filming in the store. I'm like, literally, there's like 1,000 videos on YouTube of people filming in your stores. But okay. And so I reached out to Sam Ash and I said, hey, can I film in your store? And they were like, sure. And Sammy Ash called me back and said, yeah, we'll let you film in the store. I had never been to their store. I feel so bad. I'd never been to the Glendale store on the other side of town for me. And he's like, yeah, you can come in. We'll close the store for an extra hour, or you can come in an hour before the store opens. And I go, well, I don't need to do all that. Just me and my buddy Ralph and Joe, we have cell phones and we'll just film it. And he's like, okay. And I go, so we went in and we filmed it. And in there at the time was a Gibson Tribute and gold top with P90s. And at the time they were going for $500 to $600 used. Six was probably closer to norm, but $500, you could find for five, maybe $550. And new, they were like $799. So it was $800 guitar new. So I saw that, if you guys saw that video, I saw that guitar and I was like, that's a good deal. And I'm like, hey, you know, and I always preach it on this channel. I'm like, hey, if you're going to buy anything used, buy a Gibson. It's going to, right? Especially a video like that. I'm like, I don't know if I even want a guitar. I didn't need a guitar. I just wanted to make a video. Like, what would I buy? And here's what's funny about stories and reflecting back, and maybe it's interesting. I am a huge, fanatical Ibanez fan. And in that video I did, if you see, there is like two or three in perfect condition, dirt cheap Ibanez 7-string guitars. There was like a 721 and RG 721. And I was like, I wanted it so bad. Maybe it was a 7421. And I wanted them so bad. I was going to pick them. And I was like the whole time going, but the question is like, what would I buy? I was like, well, I think I'd buy that 7-string. But I kept going back going, I'd be dumb not to buy this Gibson. They had it marked for, I think, $399. It was $400. And it was sitting there, so I bought the guitar. And why the story is funny, I maybe brought it up a couple times over the years, is that people have a trouble dating YouTube, you know, dating the times. You know, YouTube, I feel purposely sometimes hides the dates from us on videos because they want them to be kind of timeless, because videos sometimes, like in that context, you have no reference of when I made it. It's like not like my hair was much different back then. So the thing about that video drives me nuts is every year after that video, the comments about how fake that video got more and more as the price of that guitar got up. So when people knew, when I first did it, no one batted an eye. Everybody's like, oh, good deal, $400. They're only like $550. You know, that's a good deal. He did good. A year or two later, they were going used for $650, $700. People were like, wow, that's a really good deal. I can't believe you got it. Then they were going used for like $1,000. People were like, this is fake. There's no way he bought it for $400. It was staged the entire time. And then I think they even went used now like $1,200. And then people were like, this is ridiculous. Like, people put comments in that video to say, ridiculous. This is unbelievable. They didn't even try to lie to us and cheat us. There's no way he bought a $1,200 guitar for $400. So I guess the story is that video is living proof watching a guitar go up in value each year, but then having no context. Now, I've put comments on it since. I think I pinned a comment saying, hey, this video was done a long time ago. Please pay attention to that, or something like that. And now every once in a while I see the opposite comments now. Instead of saying, oh, it's fake, I just see people going, man, sure is sad to look at what guitars went for just only 5-6 years ago. And I'm like, yeah, it's tough, right? So yeah, to answer your question, tributes will go up. Gibson has done one thing and one thing well, which is they have not only created a demand for the guitars, they continue to create a demand for the guitars. You know, I hear all the time, they're like, oh, when the boomers all die, no one will buy them. Well, the Gen Xers are buying them, so I guess we got to say, when the Gen Xers all die, they'll buy them. But right now, if you look, Gibson's having no problem selling Gibsons to millennials as well. The only time I hear the argument of why people don't want Gibsons is when they're playing guitars that if you were boomers wouldn't play if they were playing a different genre of music. If you're playing, you know, 8-string djent, yeah, you're not buying a Les Paul. It's not so much about Gibson at that point, is it's just not the right tool for your job. You're not going to play that kind of guitar. If you're into headless guitars, you might be into Gibson. I couldn't put the joke. I'm sorry. But you get the idea. It's like, you know, it's not your forte. It's not your guitar. So yeah, Gibson's, you know, I hate to say it, they're good bets. And when I say hate to say it, I only say I hate to say it because I don't like looking at guitars as investments. Which ties into a great question I got this week that actually can bounce off that, which I loved. It was an interesting question. I never got it before. So the question was, somebody asked me if I keep the actual boxes to the guitars. You know, and I never heard that before. I mean, never had anybody ask that, but I never even thought about it. Like, it's never occurred to me that you would want to keep the boxes. So I was like, I understand for pedals. I think that's a collectability thing. I you know, obviously it's like, he's got the box. That's a, you know, by the way, I'd like to point out, you know, that was, you guys were putting that stuff on my videos for a while and I was not getting it. And then I finally caught up on Josh Scott videos and I was like, oh, it came from him. He's got the box. So anyways, oh, I'm sorry. It was just some guy and he put, no, Hector Cruz. I'm sorry. Hector Cruz put, do you save your branded shipping boxes? Thank you, Hector. I wanted to get your name. So, I don't save the boxes. I don't even save the cases to my guitars. I have a system that I have followed for many, many years when it comes to guitars. And it's very obvious to see on the wall what I'm doing with the guitar. If you guys don't know, there is a process to my guitars and whether or not I'm keeping them. When I say keeping them, I mean, I think I'm keeping them. For those listening, I'm grabbing a guitar. If you see me add a DiMarzio clip lock strap to a guitar, that means I have decided to keep it. Then the next question would be if I have the case. I picked up a G&L guitar. It's an ASAT HH with, it has a DiMarzio clip lock strap on it, and I don't have the case for that guitar anymore. So with cases, I'll sell them off for $50 or whatever I can get for them, depending on how unique the case is or what it is. And sometimes I give them away, you know, if I just, maybe I know somebody in the right time, the right thing, so I don't have to ship it. That's, you know, obviously it's worth the effort. And I just ditch the cases. I don't want the cases. My guitars sit in racks in my closet. The closet I have locks. And so they're in racks and I seal the door. The door seals and I lock it if I have to. It's like locking all my guitars in one giant case. And I keep a bunch of gig bags in case I got to take guitars somewhere. But I don't even have a quarter of the gig bags for my guitars. So, I mean, somebody goes, what if you move? I'm like, well, hopefully I won't move. I guess I'll be buying some packing material in boxes. Yeah, I just don't want the cases. I don't transport them in cases and I don't do it. So, and I just make that decision when I know I'm keeping the guitar. And then, so you know, sometimes I don't keep the guitar. And, you know, it's you know, we all make the same mistake. It's like I fell out of love with it. And now I don't have a case for it. And so I take the hit on that. Sometimes it's not the smartest thing. But, you know, I just do it. Now, the only exceptions to that is there's a few cases. I do have about 5 or 6 cases, maybe 7 if I'm just rounding up, that are so unique that I know, you know, these guitars just may be valuable one day with them to some extent. But, you know, not really anything else other than that. Somebody put a comment. I should have just grabbed it because it tied on. Somebody said something about my Steve I Jim guitars investment. Fast Freddy 333 says, Phil, don't you keep your Steve I guitar as an investment? No, I don't keep it as an investment. I keep it because I absolutely love it. And I wanted a Jim, you know, literally my whole guitar life. I mean, from the moment I started playing guitar, you know, I wanted a Jim or a Universe. And so when I finally got one, it has now, you know, escalated in price compared to what I paid for it. But that's not why I keep it. It's if anything, I would cash out of it right now. If there was a guitar that I wanted more than that guitar, I would absolutely sell it and buy the guitar I want. That would be not even a question. But like I said, I think I mentioned on a show once that my kids can sell it when I die or whatever. I you know, they'll get money for it or whatever. It'll just keep going up. But the main reason I keep it is because I want to play it. And I love it. That's why I keep it. So I have no guitars that are essentially like, this was for investment purposes. Like I bought it. And I don't even know, you know, I made a comment that that's probably my most, not an expensive guitar, but the best, you know, biggest investment guitar, you know, grown. But I actually might have another one that's worth more that I paid even less for than that. But I absolutely love that instrument as well. So yeah, it's just investments as guitars. And trust me, I'm very aware that investing in guitars can be a smart thing because, I mean, having the store, you know, you can't sell as many guitars as I sold in a longer decade, and not seen the, wow, if I had that guitar 7 years ago, I mean, there's a ton of guitars that have went through my hands where, you know, I bought it for $800 and now they're worth $5,000. I bought it for $5,000 and now they're worth $20,000. I mean, there is that, but I don't really get a whole lot of joy from that. I get more joy out of guitars breaking even. That is like, that makes me so happy when I buy a guitar and then I decide I don't want it anymore and I sell it for what I paid. It's almost like, it's like a magic. I can't imagine anything better than that. It's nice to cycle into, you know, and not feel like, man, if I didn't make that one wrong choice on this guitar, I could buy this thing I really, really like now. But in investment guitars, you know, if you want to become an investor in guitars, there's all kinds of people I suggest you watch that do vintage guitars and all that stuff. But if you want to be layman's at it like me, you know, Gibsons are smart choices when you're just buying a guitar for the idea. Interesting enough, I got an email, and the email, the question was, Phil, you made a statement once on your podcast that if you lost money on a Gibson, you didn't wait long enough. And they said, that's not true. They've lost a couple, you know, money on Gibsons. You mean if you bought it dirt cheap and now it's worth? No, it's just, you literally, I held true with my saying, what I said, which is if you lost money on a Gibson, you didn't wait long enough. I mean, I should have been clear. Like, I don't mean like another month or a year. I mean, yeah, you might have to wait 10, 20 years. And no, you don't have to buy them special. Funny enough, I don't know what possessed me to look at it this week, but in 2020, my first COVID purchase was a Gibson ES-335, which is easy to figure out. You can go look on my channel and see when I posted that video. So, and I hope I got the timeline right. And I almost feel like I should look it up now. I am. I'm like, well, you know, in a world where I can actually fact check myself, might as well do it. Oh, October 2020. So yeah, so it was right in the middle of like when we, you know, obviously in the middle of that, you know. So why this is relevant is, you know, the market, it's funny. And I didn't buy it in October because obviously the video came out in October. So who knows when I bought it? I could have bought it a few months before that. Most likely probably bought it around my birthday, which would be July. So anyways, why this is important is at the time they sold that guitar to me dirt cheap. Dirt cheap meaning $500 off of street price. So $24.99 is what I paid for that guitar. I think they wanted $3,000 and I got it for $24. Or maybe it was $25 then at the price. So maybe that's what it was. They sold it to me for their asking price. Whatever it was, it's worth that used now. It's worth what I paid for it in a short period of time with the extremes of, you know, the guitar market. But even now in the softer market, it's worth what I paid for it. So it's an interesting thing. It's like I said, that I would not say is typical. If you buy a new Gibson in 3-4 years, it's worth what you paid for it. But it's very typical for in 10 years. And so to answer the question that they sent me in the email, they go, I don't understand why you're saying this or why you're, you know, you're always saying if you wait, you know, the price, you'll get your price for the Gibson. It's really kind of Fender too, but mostly Gibson. It's because, it's not because their guitars go up in value. It's because they continually make the same guitar and they raise the pricing. That's really what's affecting the market more than anything else when you're talking about that kind of stuff. You buy a Gibson Les Paul, standard Les Paul in 1988. You got to understand, 1988, it's 2024. They're still making the same damn guitar. They're still making a Gibson Standard. I mean, we could argue some spec changes, some, you know, color changes, a couple things here and there, but it's essentially the same guitar. And there's, and obviously with inflation in the world and everything, 1988 price to now. So if you bought a 1988, we're not even talking about if it goes up in value, which it does. It's definitely worth, you know, used what it went for new because, again, they keep raising their new prices. So it's kind of interesting. And again, I'm not back to not saying buy Gibsons as the best investments. I'm just explaining why I like that. And I think my first reason for that was I said it, I'm pretty sure I said this in the ES-335 video. I don't think this, you know, sometimes stuff gets edited out and I don't remember what gets edited out, but I'm pretty sure I talked about the fact that I really like the Epiphone Dot. I really like that guitar, but you know, years of selling Gibsons teaches me that if I buy an ES-335 Gibson and I play it for 10 or 15 years, I will literally sell it for what I paid. It's like I get to play it for free for a decade and a half or where the Epiphone, it doesn't, it's not as easy to get all your money out of it. Not that it's a big difference, but it's a little difference. So again, that's all the talk I want to talk about that because I feel like then the channel becomes more about investing in guitars. And I just don't think that's, you know, as exciting as talking about the guitars themselves. Yeah, RRDD says we can't touch a 335 for under $3,500 net. Great deal. Yeah. So it's like, you know. And again, I didn't buy it going, ha ha, I'm going to be getting an ES-335 and then in a couple of years make a grand on it or whatever. I just was like, you know, I had sold enough guitars. I tell you all the time, I wish I was smarter than I was. My stories mostly come from experiences. In the store, I have hundreds of examples of guitars that I sold that if I had the savvy that I have now, I probably would have put them in the back. This is why when you see stores like Norm's and you see nice high-end stores like that, why do you think they have back rooms? They have them for a special clientele for sure, but they also have them because some of these guitars, they just know, sit on them longer. So that's their market. That's their world. I'm not really into that. I'm more into whatever's coming out next week. Oh, good question. Damon says, are you really getting your money back if it's inflation? Well, yeah. That's how the inflation would work, right? So in other words, if I had $2,500, and I definitely don't want to talk about inflation, but just in my, we're talking about my ES-335 example. Yes, in theory, because I spent $2,500 on that guitar in 2020, and if I sold it now, I get $3,500, which is, yes, that would mean that actually worked in my favor. that did, where the $2,500 sitting in cash on my desk from 2024 would now be worth less because I couldn't buy an ES-35 with it. So it just, again, let's not get into that. Stuff makes you nuts. Okay. All right. So many questions. Okay, this was from Randall Vander Griff. Says, so Walmart is selling a Cort Ashbody HSS guitar. Great deal. Under $400, people are making fun of the guitars because they're at sale at Walmart. Aw, man. Now you're taking me back to when kids used to make fun of me for wearing Kmart clothes. Actually, you know what sad is? That would make the kids almost sound, they probably sound horrible. They weren't horrible. I didn't make fun of because I had Kmart clothes. I got made fun of because we bought from the Goodwill. And so I got Kmart clothes that were like 10 years too late. So like in 1986, I was wearing like 70s corduroy pants from Goodwill. So, yes, the good old days of not wearing the right sneakers and clothes. Okay, so, What am I trying to say here? I'm trying to say Walmart selling guitars and people making fun of it. Well, first of all, who cares who sells what in the grand scheme of things? It's not like, it's not like it would be different than Amazon. In fact, let me explain why it's the same as Amazon. Walmart is not selling guitars. That's not what's happening. What is happening is, and I can tell you this for a fact because I'm an affiliate for Walmart. What? Yeah, newsflash. In fact, if you want, in real time, if you want, I can load up the channel. Right now, I'm loaded up with Gibsons at Guitar Center. If you look at somewhere on this screen, whether you're watching on TV, you can see that if you click any of these things that are products, so you know, these products that are listed, they're not just attached to me. I pick them. I usually pick guitar tools. And I picked Guitar Center today because I don't know. It was just faster to do that when I set up the show. And, but yeah, one of the things I can pick is Walmart, and there's guitars and tools from Walmart. But, and I think I have Walmart affiliates on here. What is going on? Well, Walmart is essentially doing what Amazon is doing in this scenario. Sometimes you buy from Amazon, and sometimes you're buying from an Amazon affiliate. It means somebody will ship it from their house or wherever they ship it from, and fulfill it, or, you know, from overseas, they'll fulfill the purchase. So what's happening with Walmart, same thing. If you buy it online from Walmart, especially on any of these links you keep seeing, more so than their website, but even their website, it's being fulfilled by someone else, a third party, and then Walmart is getting a piece, which is why Walmart is now giving affiliate dollars to people like me. So basically, if you click on a Walmart link that I have on one of my videos, I get 1%. I think I can get up to 3.5%, but I get 1% on average. And then Walmart's probably getting like 10%. And then whoever's selling it has to, you know, pay out the 11% and ship it straight to you. So that's all it's happening. So that's why you're going to see it. That you can get guitars now from Target. Anyone who has brand recognition or is set up with these affiliate type programs can do this. My guess, that I know for a fact. So everything I just told you is information you can take to the bank. However, my guess is that when you got it, you would get nothing from Walmart. You wouldn't see any Walmart badging. You wouldn't see any Walmart tape or receipt. It wouldn't be like Sweetwater, you know, Sweetwater. It wouldn't be Walmart tape or anything, because I don't think anybody from Walmart's actually seen the product or handled the product. Would it matter? I don't know why it would matter if it's a good deal and it's a good product. Maybe the concern would be, you know, returns and stuff. But here's where the Walmart branding, why they're getting money for basically doing absolutely nothing, is the branding, because you feel safe knowing you can return it. What I don't know, which would be a really, really interesting question.
We'll be right back.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
That makes me almost want to do it. is if you bought something off one of those Walmart links, could you take it back to Walmart? Could you buy a Cort guitar and then return it to the Walmart store? Would they take it, or would they tell you it has to be, like, when you get it, I'm certain you would get some kind of invoicing, and it might say something like returns have to be done online only. So, because like I said, Walmart's not really in selling that to you. Like I said, they're just the link. So if you see a guitar and it's a good deal, just means they're blowing them out. One of the problems I've had putting Walmart links on the channel, which is why I have used them. Now, keep in mind, I get 1%. So it's not like I'm like, whoa, if you buy this $100 guitar, I'm getting a buck. They are doing stupid deals. Like I did a video, a pod clip, and I remember last week, and I was putting some links to some guitar tools, you know, everything from Music Nomad to StuMac to, D'Addario. And, you know, if I use Guitar Center, you get 10%. And if I use another affiliate, I was getting like 8%. You know, obviously Sweetwater, I get 4%, I think is what, 4%. That's why I always tell you guys, you know, I mean, I refer you guys to Sweetwater. Keep in mind, Guitar Center pays 2.5 times more money to me if you go to Guitar Center. But I only use Guitar Center if that's the only option I have to put a link. I prefer Sweetwater, so I share Sweetwater links with you guys. But what's funny about this is I would go to look and the tool would be like $64.99 and I get 10%. I was like, oh, okay, you know, $6, that's pretty good. And then Walmart would be like, you get 1%. I'm like, well, but it would be $23 on 50% blowout or whatever, 60% blowout. And I would do it, I would pick it, and it'd sell out like in a second. So I was like, and then I was doing the math one day going, wow, selling out Walmart's discount, I made like half of what I made if you would have just bought a few from one of the higher guys, but the deal was great. So I definitely see where they're getting aggressive. Oh, Jeff B says, yes, you can return it to the Walmart store. So that makes sense. That would be again, like Amazon, where you could take your returns to Kohl's, you know, especially if you have Kohl's cash. I don't know what that means. I just know that, boy, the ladies really get excited about Kohl's cash. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be that way. Maybe the guys get excited about Kohl's cash as well. But, yeah, you got to have that Kohl's cash. Anyways, all I know is anytime we're driving somewhere and I have more than two females in the car, whether it's my wife or mom, any other women my wife knows, if we mention going to Kohl's, there's all of a sudden a mad dash is in the purses for Kohl's cash. So I know it's important because that they all seem to like, do you have Kohl's cash? I have Kohl's cash. I feel like every time I hear that, I go, Sweetwater, come on, where's the Sweetwater cash? Let's like all of us can get excited about Sweetwater cash. You'll be like, I gotta go to Sweetwater cash, Guitar Center cash. I feel like I've really lost the really lost track of what's going on here. Okay, so there's your answer there. Vander Griff also says, I touched it in the store, so you can walk in and get it as well. So there you go. But yes, there is Harmony. I'm trying to think of all the brands that Walmart sells, but mostly it's in that little aisle of brands of stuff. But like I said, if it's online, you're just getting it from a third-party source. This one is from Music Maker. Hey, Phil, greetings from Argentina. What do you think of the Enya Nova guitar? Enya Nova Go. I absolutely love this guitar. I have it downstairs. They made a new one with pickups and a speaker in it. And I said no to the video. It just doesn't float my boat. It doesn't do anything for me. And of course, you've probably seen it. They probably shipped a ton out to channels. Because usually, like I said, if some company like that is talking to me, they've already talked to 50 channels already. I'm always on the bottom of everybody's list for that kind of stuff. Which is fine. I'm just telling you, that's how I know. Like, I'm like, okay, I wasn't interested in it. Kind of doesn't fit the same thing I liked about the other Nova. So to answer your question, what do I think about it? I love it. I still have mine. It's great. It's fantastic. I use it on the regular, maybe not every day, but a couple times a week, I pick it up and play it. Yeah. Chris says, I think Daryl Braun did a video. I think everybody did because it comes in my feed. I did. Obviously I looked to learn about the guitar before saying no to them. You know, I've said this before, the guitars like that, the companies like that, It's really tough to say no because they pay so well. I mean, they pay a lot of money. They have really deep pockets and they have a different philosophy than a lot of the other, I don't want to say U.S. brands because it's not even a U.S. brand thing, but a lot of the traditional brands, a lot of traditional brands. So you know, if I can come up with a legitimate reason to say yes, I want to say yes because, you know, they sponsor the video and it works great, but it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's really not fun to sit in a video for 6 hours staring at a camera trying to think of five nice things to say that you can't, you know. It's not that I got negative things to say about it. I got really no negative things to say. I just don't have anything to say that I like. It's not something I would do. And to test to its quality, I would imagine the quality is the same as the Nova Go. It's made in the same materials. So if you're thinking about getting one, I don't have any concerns about quality. I just don't have any like, wow, this is totally what I would be interested in. So I don't want a guitar with a speaker in it. And they sent me another guitar with a guitar with a speaker in it. And I, same thing, just couldn't find any love for it. I might eventually do a giveaway with that one. It just sits in my closet right now until I figure out what to do with it. Okay, Phil, will you do a review of the PRS SECE24 that is going for $499? I said no to that guitar, so you know. Jeff, if this helps you, okay. There's a reason why I said no to that video. The reason I said no to that video from PRS when they requested it was I have a review of the new CE24 guitar, and talking to PRS and having experience of all the PRS guitars I have experience of, it is the same guitar that I reviewed. It just doesn't have a maple cap and it has a satin finish. So if you watch my deep dive of the CESE24 video and you like what I had to say about the quality and the things I liked and the things I didn't like, just say no maple top and no gloss finish. And if that still makes it happy for you, go for it. But otherwise, I would be making the exact same guitar video with a satin finish. Somebody said blind test. Dr. Frankenstein, you would literally be the most boring video ever because there's not going to be any difference. Maybe in the room, I'd be like, wow, the one with clear finish sounds so much clearer and the other one sounds more satiny. No, I'm just kidding about that. But I'm just saying maybe there's some subtle differences in the way that they sound maybe or something like that. But it would be things that you would have to A-B them to know, and then therefore it doesn't matter. So unless, of course, the only question you have is, should you pay an extra money to get the finish? My absolute advice would be if you want the way the other one looks, then get that one. If you don't care, buy the one for $499. You know, it's just, again, sometimes, you know, it's like, I can't make a video every day. I wish I could. It would burn me out. It's not a workload thing. Everybody always talks about your workload. It's not a workload thing. It's just to get efficiency going, you have to formulize. And once I formulize content, you're just sucking the joy out of it for me. And there's just not enough money in it to not enjoy it. The joy thing, because here's the thing. If I don't enjoy doing this, I will burn out. That's why you hear YouTubers all the time. I've never done a video. I'm thinking about giving in, guys. I'm thinking about quitting. I'm not making fun of those guys. So, you know, I totally watch those and I totally get it because you burn out. And you burn out because the same reason a lot of occupations burn out. Doesn't matter, but if you're in a commission sales, which is essentially what YouTube forces you to be in that kind of lifestyle, you live in an environment of, this one paid out and that one didn't. You know, this customer, just like if you're in sales, this customer took 3 days of my time, didn't buy jack, nothing. Total waste. Go to the, you know, 3 days lost. There's a saying in sales, you know, if they didn't sell anything today, they're like, all I got today was a dirty shirt out of the deal. I have videos, you know, my Sharpa Max last week, shit the bed. Like that, sorry for the offensive terminology, but I mean, if I didn't love doing it, I would never do another one again because of the debacle that I created with it. I didn't get paid anything. The video didn't do well and it didn't pay out anything. So if the money becomes the only driver, I'll quit. So that's what I'm saying about the satin guitar. I would love to give you that video, but again, I was super excited to do that one. What I did agree to do is do some other PRS videos of some other new exciting gear that I haven't touched. So again, just trying to keep things, you know, just trying to keep it fun so I'm driven to do it. I'm just trying, and I'm also just trying to give you insight, you know, of why I choose what I do. Like I said, I would love to pick all of them for the money. Well, hell, my wife would like it if I would pick all the ones for the money situation. I'm sure, you know, but she understands that it's not always about that. And she backs me on that. Wanna Beetle, what's up? He says, Philip, life or death question. Oh, geez. Okay, I can feel the sarcasm before it starts. Should I buy a new case for my Hofner for $60 or Harley Benton 51P? Get both, man. They're not that much. $60 and then, or get my washer and dryer fixed. I mean, do you need clean clothes? I mean, really? So here's the thing, Wanna Beetle. I can give you some really sad, honest advice. This is, not only is it honest, but it's sad. When I always take care of the priorities in my life, you know, they're important. You know, new tires, oil changes, fixing the you know, whatever, the furnace, fixing the refrigerator. I do all the adulting things always because I have enough resources financially to do both. When I didn't, I only did the guitar stuff. I would literally let the important things lapse when I was younger. I say it's because I was younger and dumber, but it was just finances. So what you should do, you should do the smart adulting thing. But if you don't, you would be no different than me and half the choices in my life I picked. I literally can tell you this, and this is sad. At one point, my wife and I, which at the time wasn't my wife, which makes you wonder why she's my wife, I had the best bass rig you could ever want, like the dream bass rig in my band. We didn't have a bed. We had an inflatable mattress in our apartment. I've told this, I don't think I've ever told that part, but I told this part before. This is true. My two bass cabinets were our coffee table and our end table. And if I had a gig, my wife had nowhere to put anything, right? There was no place to put a drink or anything because our furniture was my equipment. And that was the priorities, you know? I mean, that was just the reality of it. Priorities on the gear. I had a great bass with a backup bass, and the back window of my truck broke, and I just drove without a back window forever with gear. So I think. So Wanna Beetle, do the adulting thing, but also if you don't, yeah, I get that. It's probably not helpful in any way. Please judge me, all you guys, if you want, just judge me away. I don't care. I don't know if I regret any of those decisions as much as I probably should, but I've just always, you know, I've always been into music. And I have worse stories when it comes to CDs, but buying CDs versus like I would put duct tape on my shoes and buy new CDs. So anyways, too many guitars, no such thing. Says, can you please explain if there is any difference between dimple back versus smooth back versus 450 series CT pots? Oh, okay, I see what you're talking about now. And what value do you recommend for wide range humbuckers? You know, I don't think I've ever installed any wide range humbuckers, and I've probably only messed with a few sets in my life. So to answer that, I wouldn't know what would be different than in them versus anything else. It's, you know, though wide range, there's a reason why wide range humbuckers are so unique. They're unique to almost like just one or two kinds of guitars predominantly. And both those guitars are just something I don't have a ton of experience with. So sadly enough, you know, I love to put my hands on everything I can and learn about everything I can. These are just one of my blind spots. I've seen Dylan Talks Tone talk about them and even made some a bunch. And I think he made some cool ones for aftermarket for people with Squires and stuff. So he would probably be the source for that. I'd rather point you to a good source than give you my half-ass answer. I don't don't have one. So I wish I knew more. It's one of those things. I'm sure, to be honest with you, if I ever get to meet Dylan personally, if we ever hook up through events or something, that's probably one of the subjects I'll probably pick his brain about the most, because again, it's just, to me, it's a blind spot of information I just don't know anything about because I've never had the experience of it. This ties on to something. Gray Harris says, good evening, Phil, or night in the UK. I'm planning on fitting a JB, he means the JB Seymour Duncan pickup, HSS Strat. I read that they work better with 250K pots. Is that true? Is there an audible difference? Cheers. I'm a huge JB fan. In Seymour Duncan land, I have more JBs in my guitars than any other Seymour Duncan pickup. So I really love them. I've never heard, maybe in the online chat groups and stuff, I've never really read a lot of those. Not a lot of my friends talk about this. I've never really heard that specifically 250K potentiometers are better for JBs. In my experience with this, because, you know, this is one of those things where customers are just constantly asking you, you know, what should I put? The 1 meg, a 500K, 300K, 250K, what should you put in these guitars? And the rule I have found that works, and it made the most guitar players happy. So it's not even so much my personal, for me, what I like, but it is actually what I like. But I mean, it came about from just trying to make guitar players happy. The rule I follow is that whatever the majority of the pickups are on the guitar, follow that for potentiometers. So humbucker single means there's three pickups and two of them are single coils. So put the potentiometers that you would put for single coils in the guitar. If it's, you know, so you understand what I'm saying. So if it was HSH, I would put 500K potentiometers for the humbuckers. I found this works really well. But what's great is, you know, for $5 to $10 for potentiometers, you can swap them and see. I mean, you can put the 250Ks in there and then swap the 500s. But in my experience, the 250Ks is what I would put in your guitar. Like if you brought your guitar to me and say, I'm putting it in HSS with a JB, I would put 250K, but not because I think that makes the JB sounds better. I just think that I follow that rule. It's a steadfast rule that I found has served me well, which is the majority of the pickups are single coils. So therefore we go 250K. So at least I'm in line with what they're thinking. I just wanted to tell you why it's different. I'm coming to the same answer, but differently. I'm coming to it in a different way, but it's the same answer. Just some guy says, Phil, have you seen any PRSs with relic-like wear since they started doing the Nitro over the last few years? No, I haven't at all. If anything, I would say they're less relic'd now. You know, PRS, like every company, they've had issues. PRS has had finish issues for many years. We've talked about it a little bit with Nathan when he was on a podcast once. They're known for their hazing or the milkiness you get in finishes. The issue, I've never had that happen to any of my personal PRSs, but I've seen tons of PRSs. It's usually some of the ones from the earlier 2000s and late 90s that I've seen the issue with. What I have experienced personally, because it's so dry in Arizona, you know, your fretboard shrinks and the frets sprout and they push the finish off. Let me grab it. This S2 is the one I've been using forever. What year is this? Oh, 2016. S2 semi, hollow semi, semi hollow single cut. It looks like it's black. It's actually, like, you can see the wood grain. Nathan, when he saw it, he goes, man, I can't believe we actually stained that. Normally that top is so dark and horrible. He goes, we would have just painted it, but I don't mind. To most people, it looks black. I beat it up. I love it, but let me switch to my guitar view. Seriously, like I'm having it, a lot of it chipped out right here. I don't know if that chipped out right there. You can see where it's all stained and broken. And then right there, right here, you can see it right above my thumb. It's hard to see. See, that is the finish lifting off the fretboard. And it's done in a couple of different places. It's lifted off the fretboard. So eventually what I will do is I will sand all of this finish and then blend it off the actual fretboard and let it blend out. They tend to do that. It's not great. I guess I could be upset about it, but like I said, I love the guitar. In fact, for those diehard viewers, you remember at some point I had two of these guitars, a blue one that was gorgeous and this one was, and this one just played and sounded better. So I ended up keeping this one, getting rid of the blue one, but the blue one was fantastic. So Brian says strap button blowout. Yeah, that one doesn't have strap buttons because I compensated the DiMarzio clip locks for another guitar because I want to put I had tan ones on there. It doesn't matter. This is just boring. Anyways, and one cool thing to being friends with Larry is he sends me randomly. He'll send me new clip lock straps, and he sent me a cool one. So I'm putting a cooler one on the took the boring one off. But yeah. So what am I getting at? So with the new nitro finishes, I believe, and I'm just saying this because again, it's important to know it's not a factual based thing. It's a belief. Paul Ray Smith guitars, Paul Smith said, oh, the new nitro finishes are about tone. He thinks they sound better. It's probably true. I don't know. I don't hear any difference. But what I can tell you is I definitely think the finishes adhere to the wood better and they move a little better and they less likely have the problem I had with mine. And because the new S2s are nitro. Relicking wise, I mean, it depends. Nitro is known for wearing a little easier and cracking and stuff, but I haven't seen any. And I'm not a finish guy. Like, in other words, I don't do finishes. So it's something that's like one of those questions. I'm gonna keep this question and defer it to some people I know that really know the real answer. Because I can tell you that the nitro finishes on the PRSs don't feel the same as Gibson and Fender to me. I have all three guitars, you know, nitro Gibsons and nitro Fenders. And PRSs, and the PRSs still feel totally different. It doesn't feel the same. So there you go. It's funny to me. I always get this conversation. I don't have this whole, like, this guitar has an issue and I won't ever buy this guitar. I hate this company. I find, like I said, if you fix things, it's like a mechanic. You know, maybe you love Toyota perfectly, but even them, they make, you know, they do things you don't like. That's how I feel about guitar companies. There's some do it better than others, and some do things that I don't agree with. But ultimately, I've no such thing as a perfect guitar. Windsurf Maui says, Phil, so if you had $500 today, would you buy a PRS CE bolt-on neck? CE bolt-on SE. So they want to know if I would buy the satin PRS CE bolt-on. What that video, what would I buy for $500 really does kind of, you know, tap into where what I would do. You know, I'm assuming when you ask a question like that, what guitar would I buy for $500? You're assuming I don't have a wall full of beautiful guitars that I'm super happy with that I would just gladly go. If I could only have one guitar, I'd just pick one of the ones I already have because it's a curated collection of, you know, guitars I love. I would buy used and I would buy something that I really, really like. My guess would be, you know, I would, if I only had $500 and you asked me to buy something and only, it's going to be my only guitar. I don't have any guitars right now. I would start going and looking hard for like Godans, Made in Mexico Fenders, maybe some PRS SEs, you know, all used, Schecters. These are definitely guitars I would be scanning for on Reverb. Definitely Godan, Made in Mexico Fender, Schecters, Paul Ray Smith SEs. Trying to think one more. Maybe Carvins, but those are so they've gotten so expensive. I mean, you could still buy a perfectly made Godan guitar used for under $500, but a Carvin nowadays is pretty hard. But I would be looking for some kind of really like a gem, you know, in the rough. You know, a guitar that's just fantastic, plays great, sounds great. PRS CE SE is a great guitar. And so, yes, if you're asking me like new, would I buy it new? If, yeah, I don't know what I would pick over it new right now. That would probably be the go-to. If I went with a name brand, I mean, to be honest with you, if I only had $500 and I had to buy new, I'd probably start looking at the off brands because sometimes you can get something really, really good, you know, for a lot less because you do have to pay for brand. But that's not disqualifying the fact that the PRS CE SE whatever, I feel like I'm saying it too many letters, CE SE SE CE, obviously it was strategically priced. It was made to be a perfect price point for a really quality guitar. Got to give them credit for that. Okay. Okay. Keep going. Courier Bell Erie. I don't think I'm saying that right. Hey, Phil, I've been a sub since the Hot Rod Deluxe days. Still taking submissions for Sharp My Axe. My first guitar got cracked after a bulldozer knocked it off. I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at your cracked guitar. I just like the bulldozer. I'm like, your guitar got hit by a bulldozer sounds like a story I'd want to hear one night. Please, if you said, hey, did I tell you the story at the time my guitar got hit by a bulldozer? I'd be like, no, please tell me. I would probably stop whatever I'm doing to hear that story. Running into our house a week after it flooded. Yeah, the story didn't get much better after I kept going, did it? Which is like worse. I don't know if we're taking submissions for them. It's kind of more of an opportunistic thing. This is our problem in the past when we started doing it was like, I mean, we just get inundated with requests and it just gets overwhelming to see. So I'm just kind of, hoping things just appear, things happen, maybe we'll create a formal way to submit a guitar. People have been sending me emails since they see me pop up Sharp Max again, and I've been looking, but again, it's more about everything. I have to think of everything, not only how the video will come out, but logistics, costs, all that stuff. I'm working on it. You're on the list now. I have this. I might want to do it just to tell your story. That sounds crazy. I hope you're okay and everything's better now. Man, you guys are really focused on this. SC Ash says, Phil, would you buy the CESE or the Silver Sky SE if you could find both for $500? I'd buy the Silver Sky for $500. That's a great question. I love the CESE, but I'd probably pick the Silver Sky. Okay, Mark. All right, we're just playing this. Okay, we'll do one more of these. Mark says, hey, Phil, great channel. Thank you so much, man. Would you rather have a $2,000 guitar or 10 $200 guitars? I mean, with less expensive guitars being so much better nowadays. It's funny is that my first, I want to say I'd take the $2,000 guitar. I want to say that because I have a couple $2,000 guitars and I love them. And I really think guitars, typically once they get to about $1,000, man, they start becoming a little bit of a next level up. And then around $2,000, I don't think the next level up anymore. I think you just get more of what you got for $1,000 to $800. That being said, I have been playing long enough to know that no matter how much I love a guitar, I just am not a one guitar person. There's just something about it that eventually, I could do it, absolutely. But there's something nice about having variety is the spice of life. It's just nice to try different things. I mostly play what I like to play, which means when I play, whatever it is, like a rock blues kind of thing, or a fusion-y funk kind of thing, I'm going to be on something like my Delos or something like a Strat. So I'm going to stick to that a lot of times when I'm playing. But, if I go see a band live, if I go see Korn, I'm going to be playing Korn stuff for a month. If I go see Pantera, if I go see country music, whatever I go see, it influences me for a while. I get excited about that style of music and I got to start consuming it and learning it and playing it. So it's kind of nice to have those guitars. So I think I would pick the 10 $200 guitars. It would be a lot easier if you said 10, $300 or $400 guitars, because I $200 guitars are good, but once you get to $300, $400 guitars, I don't think you're missing out on anything. Like, I own guitars currently that are $300, $400 that I think are just as good as anything else I own. I don't know if I technically have anything $200. That Inya Go is $200 and it's fantastic. It was $199. And there might be one or two others. But the sad thing is, even when I used to refer to Dan Electros, my Dan Electros are in the $500, $600 range now, if you want to buy one like those. Pandemic 7. Come on, Pandemic 7. We don't even want two, much less seven. Says, is it safe to tune up a half step to F? Will it hurt the guitar? If safe, what gauge strings? Or should I just use a capo? Well, you can always use a capo. You should have no problem tuning a guitar up a half step. Worst case scenario, in my experience, anything with a thicker, nice maple neck, probably not going to make much difference and you won't have any issues. Some guitars, more so mahogany necks, obviously your neck's going to get a little bit of a bow and your action will come up. You might have to tighten the truss rod a quarter turn. That is possible. If you have a tremolo, you will be pulling the tremolo up, so keep in mind that. So I would prefer that if you're going to do this, do it on a hardtail. It's going to be easier. On a hardtail type bridge guitar, do hardtail. maybe not do anything, but if you, and play it great. And if it's a little high action, maybe straighten the neck a little bit by a quarter turn, tighten it just a little bit. And that's all you really have to do. Gauge of strings. I mean, I would probably use nines. But I mean, if you use tens, I'd say you get away with that. I would refrain from 11 gauge or higher on most guitars. You didn't say, and so I just want to be clear, because sometimes that's the tough part about a short question that could be involved. You didn't say acoustic or electric. You just said guitar. I'm assuming electric. If you're talking acoustic, the same things will apply, except for I'm pretty sure on acoustic, you're definitely going to have to tighten that truss rod just a little bit, unless you do lighten the gauge. And then I would definitely go tens on the acoustic. Go tens. In fact, I would, if you have 12s, you could probably get away with 11s as well, but definitely not 12s or 13s. Definitely not 13s, but 12s. If you're if you're at 12s and you want to go up half step, I would put 11s or 10s and then tune it up, and then pay attention if you need to adjust your truss rod just a little bit. And that's it. Everything else will be fine. Now, the next part of your question you didn't ask, but it's important because some other people might have this question already that never thought about doing this, is intonation issues, whether on your acoustic or electric. It may cause some chords to have intonation issues. And unfortunately, it's one of those things you got to do it and see. Really depends. Obviously, anytime you adjust your action, you're messing with the intonation. My guess is, unless you're recording in the studio, which in that case, I would do a full setup anyways, you'll be fine. At home use and online on stage, the intonation would be so subtle that most people wouldn't pick it up. And then there was one other question that was interesting from Lewis, who says, so I officially need more space than I need money. And selling online has been super big frustration. I drove 30 miles for someone not to show up. Yeah, I did that once. I went to a guitar center and sat there for an hour and the guy never showed up. And the only thing I was mad about was, I was like, why didn't I go in the store and just go look around? The whole time I just sat in my car. I should have told him, I just felt weird about saying, meet me inside the Guitar Center. But I sat in this parking lot for an hour and the guy never showed up. So that was the last time I ever tried to sell anything and meet someone. Because it was like, oh, I'm stood up on a purchase. But I understand. He says, how screwed would I be selling to Guitar Center? Well, screwed is an interesting term. In the idea of, true and perceptionally. First of all, value is not just in money. Like you said, your value is in your space more than your money. I'm presented with that problem all the time. And money is valuable. It's just space to me is so much more limited. Sometimes I have to sell stuff. Sometimes I sell stuff just literally because, I trip over it. I've tripped over stuff just because it's like everywhere. And, as a YouTube channel, run out of spaces where to shove this stuff. Cause some of it's here and it's waiting for a company to finally send a return authorization for it. Sometimes it's here because they left it. How many companies, especially inexpensive gear, you can almost bank on it. They send you the stuff and then you're supposed to send it back when you're done and they just never ask for it again. But it's scary because some companies don't ask for it back, but then 2 years later, I'm not kidding, they send you an email going, okay, yeah, we were just going through our books. We need that pedal back. And you're like, okay. So pedals aren't so bad, but guitars get a little dicey and amps to sit on. Here's the thing about Guitar Center and selling stuff to them and to music stores. We've talked about this many times and in the same way. If you're going to make that decision, you already know what to expect. You're going to get less for it than if you sold it on your own. If you're asking me, is the convenience worth what you lose selling yourself? It could be. Getting rid of all your stuff. The only problem that sucks now is in this market, it's not the same market it was, which means if you take all your stuff down to Guitar Center or to your local mom and pop, which I actually recommend almost to do so more, you're looking at the fact that you could haul all that stuff there and they're only going to take a small portion of it. That's the biggest thing about this. You understand it's not as easy as I took all my guitars down to Guitar Center and they took them all and they didn't give me anything for them. They're going to cherry pick what they like, give you very little for it, and then send you home with all the stuff. You'll have less stuff than you went there with, but the odds of them buying it all, it's going to be very little. A lot of people are putting comments in the questions. They're going to say 50% of what it's worth. If you're not aware, Guitar Center gives you a discount. I think it's like 10% off if you buy stuff there. Plus, depending on your state and city, you may not have to pay sales tax on the stuff you buy. This is one thing that I caution you. Again, you have to know your city, state laws. because it can be different for different cities and states throughout the country. But in some cases, that's one of the downfalls of getting a gift card. So what I tell you is, if you are thinking about trading in your stuff, like selling your stuff and getting less, you know, to get, let, you know, get rid of it and get something more expensive or less stuff, like trade, I would check the store first. It's a habit I've been doing for many years. I don't take my stuff into the store until I walk the store first, and if there's anything I can possibly go, oh yeah, I will totally take that. Then I go out and get the stuff, bring it in, and say, what do you give me for purchase and trade? Now, if they give it to you on trade, what's great is like I said, Guitar Center will give you a 10% discount on what you buy. I think it's only new gear, but I could be wrong. Again, they have it on their website. Look it up. But more importantly, you won't pay sales tax. Now, here's what's as important. If you trade in $1,000 worth of stuff and you find a guitar on the wall for $1,000, you can straight trade for that. You don't have to pay the sales tax. The person who buys your used gear will pay the sales tax. Not in every city, not in every state, but most. But if you go to a Guitar Center and go, okay, I will just take a gift card, so this is why I'm cautioning you on that. Once you get the gift card, you're paying sales tax regardless. So if you take $1,000 worth of stuff to Guitar Center, they give you a $1,000 gift card, you leave, you come back to that store, another store in a day or two, and then buy something, you will be paying the sales tax. So that's what I'm saying. The advantage could be to you to do the trade without doing a gift card or a sale, an outright sale. You might save some money. And that sometimes helps because, like I've told you about before, is you're not really looking for new gear. Like me, if your problem is space more than money, you sometimes can solve two problems at once. And those problems can be, you got 10, I'm just giving a scenario, you got 10 Harley Bentons and they're just, you don't know what to do with all these guitars. You don't know why you bought them because, hey, we all do stuff. Take them down to a store and trade them for one nice, more expensive guitar that maybe has more cachet and value in the long term, whether it's a Fender or a Gibson or a Paul Reed Smith or whatever it is. Maybe something you like, maybe something you kind of like, but more so, like I said, you're just trading out the value. What's nice is if you are able to get something that has value, especially used, it's most likely going to hold its value. To some extent, we're not even talking about it going up and you making money. We're talking about, you get a $1,000 guitar that's everybody seems, you know, if you're like me, I always go, I got 5 or 6 friends that would pay me $1,000 for this guitar right now because, you know who's in the market for something. Excuse me. And then what you do is you put that in your closet, sit on that for a while. And if it's not about money, you don't have to worry about getting the money now. You can wait to cash that out later. That's just things I've done in the past that are really, really nice. I don't think there's any scenario in which you go to a store and you understand you're not going to get the same. I don't really dissuade from that. Some people are going to say, don't go to the music stores, don't go to the guitar centers. I've made the comment about, bringing sand to the beach before. Like I said, you have to decide, like in your case, space is worth more than money, then you know you're losing money. If you're okay with that. What I will tell you that's important that has helped me really well is when you get those offers from Guitar Center and they're low or a mom and pop, like I said, I'm going to keep saying, because you can get a better deal sometimes from a mom and pop. I always have my friends ready to go on my, I'm ready on my phone. So as soon as they're like, hey, if I was hoping to get $700 or something, they're like, we'll give you $500. I'm like, $500? I'll do it right then. I'll just blast out a text to all my friends and I'll be like, $500 right now is what Guitar Center's offering me. Anybody want it? And most of the time they say, no, I wish it was a better position. Or they'll say, not right now. But every once in a while you get that guy going, yes, Phil, yeah, bring it over. And I'm like, yeah, if I'm going to give it away, give it to a friend. Belt Jones 1 says, I have a Kiesel with a finished neck and unfinished ebony fretboard. There is a finish sprayed over the fret ends. Oh, okay. So what he's explaining is the top of the fretboard is not finished because they're not going to be finished, but the neck has got a finish on it and it goes all the way up to the edge of the fretboard, including over the blades of the fret. So it's finished all the way up to the top of the fretboard. Okay. And it was sprayed over by the factory. So it's stock. But it's bubbling up where the frets are sprouting. So yeah, the frets are pushing the finish off the neck. How would you fix this? Well, I wouldn't because I'm not a finish guy. And I'm not even going to suggest you how you can finish it. What I'm going to instead explain is what you need to do to rectify it. I don't know if Kiesel warranties that. I just don't know. And something I've never had to ask them. All the guitars I have from Kiesel, except for one, are unfinished necks. My neck through a single cup bevel is finished. And funny enough, that has never given me any hell, but I had, my swirl is my first one where the neck just shrank on me. And now I have a little bit of fret sprout to deal with. I think it's my first Kiesel happen to me, but I've had it happen to a few friends. It happens. Like I said, that's why I have a channel when I'm constantly fixing it in videos. So in your case, it's problematic. There's a couple things you can do. When I say you, I mean somebody can do. I don't recommend you take your new high-end custom shop instrument and start trying to fix it. But let me tell you what most likely somebody's going to do to it. They may try to rehydrate the guitar. So in other words, put it in a box or a case with humidification and hope to expand out the fretboard. If they can do that, that's great, right? Perfect. And then sometimes they might use a syringe with basically super glue and inject it into where the finish is lifted off and then press it back on. Nathan's told me many stories working for both Jackson and Paul Rees-Smith having to do basic finish work like that. Basically the paint back onto the wood. So sometimes they'll have to do that. Shane the something says, just call Jeff. He's great with customers. You would deal with, I can't remember his name, the new kid. So the other thing that they could do is they could sand the finish, basically take that finish off the actual fretboard and blend it out. I've had to do that personally because I'm not a finish person. So what I will do is I will literally sand from the top of the fretboard on the side down until I get past the fret, basically essentially removing the clear coat off the fretboard. You wouldn't be able to tell I did it the way I do it. And then I will take care of the fret sprout. And then if there's ever a fret sprout in the future, you won't have to deal with that problem. But I wouldn't recommend you doing it or trying to do it. I just want you to know if you take it to somebody, what they will do. First, I would definitely let Kiesel know. The reason I tell you guys this is whenever I tell you guys with Fender, with Gibson, with Paul Rees-Smith, with Kiesel, with Ibanez, you always tell the manufacturer what's going on. Never construe that as I'm telling you like, oh, and they'll take care of it. I don't know what they all do. They all, like I said, I have stories both ways where companies have flat out sent you a brand new guitar and no problems. And I've had companies basically tell you it's your fault. I've pointed out that the new CEO of Fender basically said that it's just how guitars are done. And it's just how fret sprout is just here to stay. And it's just a thing. I think it's all sucks. I would like them all to be responsible for it. But again, I don't make all the policies for all the guitars companies. What I can tell you, though, is that it's very important that they know that they have an issue. And here's why. If you tell me, if you tell me that this happened to your guitar, I'll be like, yeah, it happens. If 50 of you told me your Kiesel neck shrank, I'd be like, oh, ooh, sounds like they're having an issue, right? Same with them. The first reaction might be like, I don't know, what did you do to it, right? You leave in your garage, which you did it. I don't know, maybe that's their attitude. But when 50 people, when 500 people tell them they have an issue, they're aware of it. Whether they take care of it, I hope they would. But if they don't, I bet you, without a doubt, they will correct the procedure. One thing that's very interesting about Kiesel guitars and why I like them, even though they have some controversy in the past, because yeah, he got into it with a customer publicly. It wasn't pretty. However, I really want you to pay attention to something that's really interesting. I didn't say anything. I was curious to see who caught it. None of you caught it. When I did the Kiesel factory tour, where I walked through and it was unedited in any way, and you did a tour, if you were paying attention, I'm sorry, it's an Easter egg for some of you. I'm not going to blatantly do it. You're going to have to do some work. You're going to have to be super sleuths out there if you don't know what I'm talking about. Some of you know what the issue was with Kiesel and the customer and where that all went wrong. What I will tell you is some people thought his apology was sincere. Some people thought it was insincere. I really don't have a feeling either way. I don't know how to judge somebody like that. What I can tell you is what I took notice, which why I have more respect for him, is in the tour of the factory, he didn't say why, but he was explaining the process with roasted necks and he said it had been changed. I can tell you, as someone who's been in business for 2 decades, that's what he did. He solved the problem going forward. He fixed it. I believe he fixed it. I don't know. I didn't ask him. I had so many other things to ask him that day. I asked him those things. I believe he fixed it because of that situation, because he didn't want it to happen again, which is interesting. See, if I really thought he didn't care, I think he wouldn't have addressed the issue. And so why I'm telling you that is same with the fret sprout. I don't know what kind of experience you're going to have if you call them, just like I wouldn't know if you called Gibson or Paul Reed Smith or Fender. But I think you should tell them. And then I'm telling you that if you're going to have to take it for service, this is the kind of things that are going to be done to it to fix it. Like I said, I'm dealing with the fret sprout on my swirl, but it's unfinished neck, so it's just going to be the quick little fix that I've shown you guys many times. That quick fix I would recommend, but finish on the ends, like my PRS I just showed you earlier, is having the same issue. It's pushing the finish off. It's more problematic. It's more of a pain in the ass. If in your case, I would definitely have a professional do it. In my case, if I really cared about this S2 that I've been beating up, because I've been beating it up since 2016, so I really don't care about it that way, the way it looks. But if I did, I would have asked Nathan for a favor. Say, hey, Nathan, can you fix this finish issues on the neck for me and address this? Because he would know how to do it. I'm sure he would do it for me as a favor. But in your case, I would definitely take it to a professional. I'm just giving you an idea what they're going to do. Dougal Dog said they did. You did notice it. I was waiting for comments in the video to see if anyone noticed that they changed. He says it quickly, not like in a way like to be comprehensive, but he just, if you're paying attention, he's like, yeah, we changed the way we roast the wood now in the necks for more consistency. And it was very clear to me that it was like, yes. In my opinion, I love it when everybody tells me which company's bad. To me, they've all done something crazy that I don't understand. And I hope for the best. But like you guys, I'm addicted to this stuff. It's like, I don't know what to tell you. Somebody says, make a carbon fiber fretboard. You can do that. I mean, obviously, Parker did it. it's a little bit better. Me personally, I would rather not have the finish go over the fretboard. So on painted neck guitars or on gloss necks, I like the gloss to stop at the fretboard, like they tape it off at the fretboard. That's my preferred way of doing it for me personally, but a lot of them don't do it that way for a ton of reasons. I don't even think the new Hollow Flash Badlands, I think it's painted all the way over to the fretboard because, again, I didn't have any say-so on that, but I prefer it to go to the fretboard and stop. And because of that reason, because fret sprout, I live in Arizona. Fret sprout is inevitable. That's why I talk about it so much. In my environment, it's going to happen. The problem is it used to be an Arizona only problem and maybe Colorado, parts of New Mexico and parts of California, a couple of the dry places, maybe Australia was complaining about it. Now, you can be in the rainforest and have fret sprout now. It's getting weird because they don't, because the wood is not dried like it was. Lid Faye, thank you for the super sticker. Excuse me again. I'm sorry for coughing at you guys. Ray says, I'm in the studio recording a Strat with dead strings, a half step down. Why does this sit so well in the mix? I don't know. Strats to me, which is why I love them, to me, are always great in the mix. I think that's what Tellys do great in the mix, not so much as Strats. As a bass player, I like P basses in the mix more than jazz bass. Jazz bass is a little too, has too much of a, it's too much of a showboat instrument, even though I have jazz basses. I prefer P bass. I think the P bass and the Fender Strat are perfect for being in a mix. And I like my strings deadened a little bit for when I'm recording too, for the same reason. I'm not a virtuoso. I'm not a solo player. So I kind of am always in the rhythm. And in the rhythm, I kind of want it to be, I like it that way. So that, I don't know if that's an answer to your question, but that's my, I like what you, I agree with you. I like it the way it works when it works like with you. Shane says, hey, Phil, I took your advice and took 8 unwanted pieces of gear in for trade and walked out with an awesome used R8. Oh, Gibson R8. That's a nice guitar. I really feel like I came out a winner. Thanks so much for advice. And this ties into, what was the sign on? Your advice, or your question, Lewis, about how screwed you'd be going to Guitar Center. Look, that trades sometimes are the best way to come out ahead on a guitar. And I, in my experience of trades with stores, not with people, those go well too, but you got to be more strategic. Because again, you're talking to a person who has, is just like you, they're thinking like you, they're, you're both have the same agenda. You want to come out ahead. The store doesn't need to come out the head the same way you do. Okay. Sometimes the store is thinking, wow, I got this really expensive guitar. It's really hard to sell. We really, it's a lot easier to sell a lot of less expensive stuff that's used. I mean, it's like every day. So here's what I mean by that. I like the strategy. I go in the store, I find the guitar that I want or the amp I want, the high-end thing. I find what I want first. I know the price. And then I can reverse engineer it. I can go home, go on Reverb, in Guitar Center's case, go on Guitar Center's website, but also use Reverb and eBay. Go and look at what the stuff I want to trade is going for, and then take the number, which is going to be 50 to 60% of that. Okay. If you're lucky, it's 60% of the value. So if it sells for 1,000, you'll get six. If you're not lucky, you're going to get five. There's no reason to take less than 50% of something's value unless it's absolutely useless and you don't want it. So if you know you want a $2,000 guitar, you know what you're trying to do. You're trying to bring them $2,000 worth of stuff that they'll give you $2,000 for. You walk out with a high-end guitar. And that sometimes is a better win. Justin says, what if you don't have a lot of gear? What are you watching here for then? Just kidding. No, man, Justin, I understand. If you don't have a lot of gear, you're lucky. I don't think a lot of players, look, most players that have a lot of gear don't want a lot of gear. That's not what, some do. Some just like to have a lot of stuff. It's really like an accumulation. I like the term curated. This is a curated collection of guitars. It's over the years, it's guitars that I thought I wanted and then I don't. So I'm stuck with them because I don't know what to do with them. Guitars that I absolutely love. Yeah, I mean, there's just going to be different, guitars are in different stages of. And so if you don't have guitars, you want to get rid of gear, you consider yourself lucky because that's where everybody's trying to get to. Just this, their curated collection. In other words, whether your collection is three guitars or 30 guitars or 300 guitars, it doesn't matter. You're curating it. You're trying to find the perfect collection for you and what that size is. And in my experience, most players, whether they're professional players like Joe Bonamassa or they're collectors or they're whatevers or they're doctors or lawyers or whatever term makes you guys feel better when you guys say crap on the internet. Usually at any given time, if you look at any one player's collection of gear, it's not perfectly curated. In other words, there's a couple things and they're like, yeah, I don't know if I still like this. And yeah, I haven't used that in years. I mean, it's just, they're always trying to refine it to exactly what they use and need. My buddy, that's the name of the sign on, says, been watching some older podcasts recently. Thank you for your honesty in the episode 304 about the affiliate links. Here's a dollar back. No problem. Like I said, anytime you guys ask me questions about the industry or YouTube, and unfortunately, you gotta understand, you know, repairing guitars, I have some experience I can help, you know, or talk about it. I wanna say talk about it. Owning a store, I could talk about that. Being in the industry for other, you know, things, marketing, I could talk about that. Now being on YouTube for many years, that's what I said. Sometimes I want it to be a guitar channel, but it's a guitar YouTube channel. And anytime I can share stuff with you, I'll share it because I think I look at it like this. I look at the opposite of when the companies get mad at me. Some companies get mad for the stuff I say, and not in the ways you think. they get mad because they think, I believe they're wrong in thinking the way they do, but they think that I'm somehow telling the world some business. And what I tell them over and over again is I'm telling a small group of interested people that want to be educated about it. That's totally different. So when I talk about affiliate programs or if I talk about, because you can understand most of the stuff I talk about are the business relationships I currently have or I have. So of course you can imagine some of the businesses like, why are you talking about this? And if I'm allowed to, I will talk about it. If I'm not, unfortunately I can't. But I talk about it because I'm like, because the group that's watching this show, which seems big to you, is not that big. The guitar, big guitar channels get a million views. They all, you know, they get half a million views. The podcast video gets, when I'm killing it, it could get 50,000 views. On average, it can get down to 30,000-40,000 views, which is a lot. Some channels would be like, I'd kill for that. But in the grand scheme of things, you have to be interested in this subject to listen to me talk about it. And so if you are, which I think you guys are, I talk about it. And affiliate leaks are one of those things. How do these YouTubers, how do I make money? How do the companies work with me and make money? Yeah, I think it's important. Because otherwise, you listen to the comment sections, which are mostly wrong. And it's not because they're commenting. It's just most people don't understand. You know, they go, oh, this guy was paid to say, I just deal with it today. Somebody said, I'm paid by PRS, and therefore I say things bad about Gibson. I've never received a single dime from PRS ever. And I bought almost, well, I bought all my, no, not even all. I've actually gotten free Gibsons. So not from Gibson, though. Isn't that funny? I got a free Gibson from AMS, American Music Supply. When I say free, it means it was, sent to me in exchange for content because I wanted it. They asked me if I'd do a video, and I'm like, and my logic was, yeah, I want a Gibson. I own more Gibsons than I own PRSs and Fenders. Gibson is the most amount of guitars I own are Gibsons. I like Gibsons. I love to say I dislike or like Gibson the company, but the reality is whatever we talk about has nothing to do with whether I like them or not. It's just because it made the subject that week and you guys wanted to talk about what they did. Look, I like Kiesel. Jeff stepped in it and you guys talk about the stuff he stepped in on Kiesel. Paul, he doesn't really step in a lot of problems. He doesn't create a lot of problems. So PRS doesn't get discussed that way on the channel a lot. We usually talk about the guitars. That's what's great. That's why sometimes I say maybe the ownership of these companies shouldn't be out there doing anything. Some owners shouldn't talk. It's not doing their company any favors. We'll just talk about their guitars. But that's why we talk about it. I think if that helps. So I tell you guys when I have a bias. At least I try to disclose the bias. With PRS and Gibson, I don't have a particular bias. I like a couple of the employees in marketing at PRS because they like my channel and they send me products so I don't have to buy them. That's nice. I mean, I like Gibson guitars. I like Fender guitars, but I would be dumb not to mention that I have almost 400,000 subscribers and a gear review channel that does really well. And those are like the two of like, if I name five companies that don't work my channel, two of them are Gibson and Fender. I don't really know why that is. I assume it's because of this discussion every week. They don't like it, but I don't know. So, you know, I can't really say that's for sure, but it would be dumb for me to not mention that the two biggest guitar companies don't work with the channel in any way, shape or form. Fender I used to work with, but then they stopped. I don't know. Could be because they just find my channel irrelevant. Maybe they don't like it. They're allowed not to like it. Or maybe they, I don't know. Who cares? My point is, there is as many Fender videos and Gibson videos as PRS videos as Ibanez videos as any other videos. I try to put all the stuff on there that I think is interesting. So that ties into my buddy, the saying, thank you for basically the transparency. We'll be as transparent as we want. So that's great. Remember, I still, at the end of the day, all my money from this platform comes from you guys. It's 90-something%. I'm saying 90 because I don't know. It used to be 95. I think it's actually gone down. I think it's closer to 92, 90. I'm just making up numbers, but it's 90%. So 9 of every $10 I make on this platform came from you guys watching it or Patreon sponsoring it. So, of course, that's my allegiance. Because that's the money. I gotta make the people who are paying me happy. It happens to be you guys. I've worked really hard to keep it that way. T-Size says, hey, Phil, thoughts on vintage pickups? I bought an 86 Kramer Focus 1000. Want to replace the pickups replace the pickup and Kramer enthusiast. Strongly recommend the JBJ era pickup. $200 for a vintage pickup, $100 for new. I have never found that any older pickup is more magical than newer pickups that are made to the same spec when it comes to getting you close enough to matter. Okay. So here's what I mean by that. When I did the video recently on the Paul Reed Smith S2s, I mentioned that they're including a $500 set of 5815s. And somebody said in the comments, what the hell makes a pickup worth $500? Nothing. Same thing that makes a good pickup worth $100 that makes it worth $1,000. Nothing real, you know, nothing that you can qualify with a hard cost. It's more of a, you know, they can get it, so they ask for it. Same thing with vintage stuff, I find. That's why I'm not a huge fan of that. I bought some vintage DiMarzio Super Distortion pickups to compare. I feel like a dumbass now. I bought them. I was like, oh, 1970, blah, 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 Super Distortions. They're probably much better. And of course, the forum's like, they're much better. The new ones don't sound the same. I got them, A-beat them. I couldn't really hear a difference. Later in the discussion with Larry, I found out pretty much that I think they're using the same machines and the same people and the same, it's the same. I'm like, he wasn't very shocked that I didn't find much difference in the sounds. So to me, I mean, if it matters to you to buy the vintage correct thing or, if, you know, but to hang this kind of magical-esque thing to it, I can't do that. And I'm not saying I don't have my own magic hoodoo that I believe in when it comes to gear. You know, it's just not vintage. There's nothing that makes me believe in all my years that something that was made basically in someone's basement 50 years ago can't be replicated to some degree to get it close enough. And I just can't argue the last 10% of anything. If somebody's arguing with me that Gibson made a replica of a 1950 Les Paul, 59 Les Paul down to the T, I would assume that if you played them and somebody said, oh, but the real one sounds better and feels better, I'm not going to disagree with that. But I am going to say that I'd be shocked if it wasn't 10% better. It's not a huge difference. It's not night and day. And I need night and day differences sometimes to justify price for me. So, and then Average Joe is saying a JBJ is a JB made by MJ from the custom shop. And again, you know, I've talked about this before. Fender, when I was a dealer, they gave me a set of Abigail Ybarra pickups as a gift. I didn't even like them. I put them in. I hyped it up in my head that these were going to be the magical pickups. I put them in and I thought they sounded fine. In fact, they probably sounded great. I just was like, wow, I can't believe this. So same thing. To me, if you want a JB, you get a JB. When somebody says older JB pickups, especially JB pickups, there's a big variance in JB pickups. Not over the years, just even like you can get three JBs right now and there's a little bit of variance in each one. But all of them are pretty good. So, you know, there's a, you know, you get the idea. So it's up to you, but I can't give you anything qualifying other than you would have vintage correct stuff in your guitar if that matters. Think about this. I talk about it with my own set of pickups. I have a, I like to talk about the Northern Lights more so than the Copperheads, but the Northern Lights is a pickup that's cloned off of a pickup that a friend made that I loved. I literally have to make content. I have other things to do. And so when I sit in front of the winder, now that I have my wife helping me in front of the winder, you know, on the winder, packaging, putting them together, marketing them, testing them, and I can make a little bit more of them. That's why I brought the price down. Essentially, I have told you guys this many times. My price is dictated on how much time I have to give to making them, and I can only make so many. You know, and that's my time, but that's not I'm not trying to tell you like I'm using super magic magnets. I'm using stuff that no one can get. I literally buy my stuff from the same place that almost every single person who does small run amounts of pickups like me gets their stuff from. We're all buying from the same source. So it's just my formula and my time, and I put a premium on it because of those two factors. But I would never sit here and tell you that my pickups are in fact, I think if you're a halfway decent pickup winder, you could take my pickups and clone them out pretty fast. So just like how I cloned them out, just like how everybody else can clone them out. I like something, I liked it, and I went with it. I appreciate everybody who buys pickups and supports the channel. With modeling amps in mind, which ones, in your opinion, are still relevant and which ones have suffered the demise of being out of date? I think with modeling amps, you said amps, not modeling processors. Processors, I think, is different because obviously technology is a big factor for recording, how good they sound. To me, I could still play a Spider 2 amplifier in a practice room and I'll get a tone out of it, just work out a good sound and just play it. So are they still relevant? Old ones, I think, are relevant. If you're asking if they... do they suffer the demise of being outdated? They do, because obviously newer tech makes them better. They are technology-based, so newer tech makes them better, but better is better. That's it. Not crappy and great. It's just they're okay, and they're a little better now. So yeah, I would say a new one's better. And I think a lot of companies, whether it's, and I'll just pick them on them all so I don't feel like I'm pointing everybody out. Fender, PV, Line 6, you know, insert other company. I'm trying to think, Crate doesn't even exist anymore. But a lot of those modeling companies, I think they're all kind of guilty of just repackaging an older unit with very, very little updates all the time, you know. And so a lot of times when you're like, oh, the new one blows the other ones away, you can be, because sometimes it's like a car remodel. Sometimes they retool the whole thing and they start from scratch. And sometimes it's just a, you know, hey, they put a new grill on it. So I like modeling amps for practice. They're effective. They're cheap. They sound good. I'm in total shock all the time with people's intense feelings for them, either really positive or negative. I don't understand it. It's it never makes sense when people are like, these are horrible and they should be destroyed. I'm like, they're fine. it's fine. It's a product to let you make music, and it does fine. I currently am using the Sparks because I bought all three Sparks. I use the Spark Mini in my bedroom, I'm using the Spark 40 in the shop. I have my Yamaha THR 30 downstairs, and I have a Spark Go wherever I go. So that's what I've been using for practice. And I have the Catalyst, but I pretty much only use it for videos just because it's usually set up for videos. Yeah, modeling amps. You know what, Average Joe says they are fun. They are fun. Modeling amps are fun. You hear every once in a while there's like this rational person going, I wish I had this 20 years ago or 30 years ago when I was playing guitar. Yes, they're fine. And you know what's great about old tech modeling amps? They are boat anchors when it comes to selling them. So like it cracks me up not to say, oh, what great would it be if when I started playing guitar instead of a CMC amp that only had literally tone. I think it had tone, volume, and no, it didn't have gain. So it had bass, treble, and volume. That was my three knobs on my amp. That's what I got on my first amp. No gain control, no mid-range. Mid-range is for rich people. And it had a 6-inch speaker. It might have been 8-inch, but you know what? I could love to say, what would I do if I had a Line 6 or something like a Viper by PV or something? Well, one, I would have been blown away with how amazing it was. But add this. I've walked in music stores as recently in the last couple of months and seen modeling amps that are 10 years old. Yeah, they're dated technology. And they can't give them away. They're like $30. I've seen a 212 50 watt modeling amp for $119, and it had a layer of dust from sitting in that store for the last 2 years. And they're like, yeah, we can't get rid of it. And I'm like, $100? That's crazy. So yeah, I think they're great. I'm doing it. I think they're good. They serve a purpose, and I'm glad the older ones are cheap. Newer ones sound a little better. And that's my strong and not so strong feelings on them. False Prophet says, hey Phil, have you played or seen the Warmoth Tele Strat hybrid body? I am too a Strat dude thinking about building one. I have not. I need to reach out to Warmoth. You know, when COVID happened, some of you guys might know, I had worked out a deal with Warmoth to build two guitars. So they were going to get me the parts. I was going to put them together. They're going to be twins. I was going to build the same guitar twice. And then what was going to happen is we were going to give away one to you guys in a giveaway, and I was going to keep one. And I thought, oh, this would be cool, because then you know, somebody will win one and know that I have one too, and it'd be kind of cool, right? Maybe a bonding experience between me and a viewer. And then COVID happened and it didn't work out. Maybe it's worth doing. And at this point, maybe just build one and give it away. So maybe that's the body I'll pick. I don't know. Like I said, I haven't reached out to them since. I told you, I don't make a habit to reach out to companies. Usually they reach out to me, and obviously when that fell through because of COVID, they said they'd reach out again, and I think they forgot about it. But maybe I should break my own policy and reach out to them and say, hey, let's do this. Let's do a giveaway. I'll build it, and we'll give it away. Rummy says, Phil, anything to look out for when using bass with guitar pedals? Do I need bass FX pedals? I like how it sounds with the Tumnus and the MXR Phaser. I personally use mostly guitar pedals for bass. I don't really go specific. The only times that I feel like I need a bass specific pedal, besides unique sounds for bass, maybe like an envelope filter sometimes for bass is a little better, in my opinion, for the bass than some of the guitar ones because of the frequency range. But sometimes the overdrive pedals for bass are nice to have. They usually have two lines where they send the clean bass signal through. So, because one of the things that sucks about bass playing is when you switch to overdrive, if you don't have that same original signal coming through, all of a sudden the low end frequency in the band goes away and you lose it. So that's one nice feature. But I generally don't use any bass specific pedals for my bass. I stick with all guitar pedals for my bass, and I've always been that way. And I don't use very many pedals, but when I do, it's usually guitar pedals. Johnny, thank you so much, says KYG Support Fund. I appreciate that, Johnny. Thank you so much. Alex says, just got a Boss Katana. Got delivered yesterday. Best guitar product in a long time. I predict you're going to sell huge numbers. Oh, I predict they're going to sell huge numbers. Yeah, they might. That Boss Katana thing might work. No, just kidding. That's great. The Katana's still great. Isn't that funny? It's been out for a few years now. Still great. I slightly prefer the Catalyst to it, and there's a couple reasons why, but it's not like I like the Catalyst and don't like the Katana. It's just I had one of each, and I just preferred the Catalyst for a couple things, but both were really great. I think the Katana is still a great quality product, and I think it's just, I don't know, it's just nice to know that, you know, for a decent amount of money, you can get something really good. Tom says, Tone Jar, thanks for what you do. Wow, thank you for the huge super chat, man. I appreciate that. It's very nice of you guys. Thank you so much for all that support the channel all the way. Amanda says, no more super chats, please. Yeah, I tried to turn them off a minute ago and it wasn't working. So yeah, don't do it. I tried to turn them off at the end so we don't have any overflow. One quick thing, and I see that I have a left-hand paw. I'm going to do his super chat or their super chat. But one thing about super chats, and it just because it came up last week, somebody super chat got missed. Something to you understand, I haven't said it in a while, so I should tell you again. Super chats are, because it's money, because you guys are paying to the channel, it's accountability. In other words, you know, YouTube gets 40% of that, basically, right? 45, but it's definitely 40%. So if you give me 10 bucks, they get 4 and I get 6. That's how super chats work. Because it works like that, they archive them. I have them in the order I've ever received all of them. And it goes back 2 years. I tell you that because I used to say this all the time and I maybe have been remiss about not saying it recently, but when you super chat the channel, if I miss it for any reason, please feel free, make a comment, send an email. Usually the moderators like Amanda and the guys, they will catch it and tell me. Amanda's usually on it dead. As soon as the video ends, she's like, you missed two. These are them. I'm like, okay. But like I said, I have them in the system. So if I ever miss one for any reason, please just let me know and I'll go grab it and do it like I did this week or the following week. That's what's great about them. That's why, by the way, I try to answer them towards the end of the show. This is how long the show's been going. I haven't said it in years. The show used to be an hour long, and the idea was always in the first hour, I do pretty much none of the super chats. I try to stick with who came early and who I can see at that time. And then the second hour, I consider it bonus hour. In other words, people who support the channel with super chats get the second hour to get it, keep going. Like, I keep it going for that reason. And that's why, so you know, if for those of you who have been joining new in the last couple years, when you go back and you see a show and it's only an hour and a half versus 2 hours, 2.5 hours, you see now a show, it's hour 30 minutes. Look, I guarantee you, do the math. Go look at the super chats. There was not that many super chats. The second hour is usually the bonus time. And if I have a lot of super chats, there seem to be a lot volume-wise today, then we went extra long, extra innings. So I'm just letting you know, and I feel bad because I haven't mentioned that in a while. But let's do left-hand path real quick. I don't know why I saw southpaw on that. It says, Alvarez posted a video last week comparing two of their parlors, identical specs, except one hand-built, one factory. They concluded that the handmade just 10% better than the factory, 2 times the money. Thoughts? I find that, first of all, if I can impart some experience of reviewing gear, more so than anything else, I'm not talking about repairing it or building it or anything else, reviewing it. What have I concluded in years and years of reviewing stuff? that if I have to compare it to hear the difference doesn't matter. Me personally, I think it's entertainment. I think comparing a $10 tube screamer to a $100 one and doing a video, and do I enjoy watching that? I absolutely do. I hope you do too. Hearing the differences. But to me, if I can't, somebody sends me a fake clone tube screamer for $10 and I plug it in and it sounds like a tube screamer, it's a tube screamer to me. To say that it's not as bright as the other one or the knobs. I watch people when they do reissues of stuff, they literally go, oh, well, on the reissue, you got to put the knob a little bit different here and a little bit different there. And then they sound alike. They don't sound alike unless you put the knobs a little off from each other. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. But it's fun to talk about and share. And same thing with guitars. This is why I was talking about the PRS CESE earlier. I would compare those two guitars, and by the time it got to your ears from YouTube, the differences would be so little, you would really not be entertained by it. And I could only tell you exactly what I told you without having to compare them, which is, if you like gloss finish and a fancy top, get that one. And if you like satin, or you'd want to save a few $100, get the satin finish one. So yes, left hand path. I find the same thing with the factory versus handmade guitar, acoustics, I would expect, think of this, the results they have are exactly the results I expected to hear, which is the hand-built, they're both hand-built, so you know. This is important on acoustic guitars. There's no such thing as a manufactured CNC'd out acoustic guitar. They CNC out the parts, but somebody still has to hand assemble it. $99 acoustic guitars. It is the most hilarious thing, and we'll end on this note. It's the thing that makes me laugh to this day. My favorite thing to read on acoustic guitars is handmade. This is handmade. Now, sometimes maybe it implies that it was entirely handmade, but in my experience, that is very rare. Unless you're buying from an actual luthier who's building your guitar from scratch, they are not handmade. And even then, still not 100% handmade. There'll be some mechanical tools and electric power tools. But usually when I see an acoustic guitar, from a brand and it says handmade, the $99 guitar at Costco, acoustic guitar, is handmade. If you can watch 1,000 videos, no exaggeration, on YouTube of them building acoustic guitars, them being every manufacturer, and they're all done by hand. It's all basically cut wood, wet it, put it in jigs, glue it together by hand, hand finish it. So everything is handmade. So the reason where I say it's funny is it's funny to me that they don't highlight that when the guitars are cheap, even though they are true. They could, but they want to hold that terminology for the higher end guitars. They're like, oh, this one was handmade. Well, they were all handmade. They're like, but this one, we need more things to justify the price. So we're going to say that on there. That's the thing. But I think that's not really that shocking, but I see your point. And I feel the same way. Things are 10% better. That's about right. But the last part that's important is, whether it's 2% better, 10% better, or 1% better, if it matters to you, it's like tunnel vision. You can't get out of it. You can't get away with it. The difference in something can be as little as 1% different. And if you can get tunnel vision on that, and it can be the most important thing that matters to you. And the sad thing is, because this is an emotional thing that we do, play music. And if you're not feeling it, if you're not loving it, it's not going to happen. So, like I said, I wish that wasn't true. I wish logic would prevail, but most of the time it doesn't. For those of you it does prevail for, congratulations. I think you win. All right. On that note, I'm going to let you guys go because I got indexing now to do, and I got timestamp the show and make some clips if I can. And I always want to thank you guys for hanging out. If you give it a like on the way out, I'd appreciate that. You can give it a thumbs down too if you want. Whatever makes you happy, I guess, is probably good enough. And on that note, I'm going to say thank you for your time and know your gear.
Before you spend your rent, car payment, or child's inheritance on gear, please see the affiliate links down below.